Hey, it's the Tim Anderson Podcast. Welcome, everybody. I'm Tim. That is my guy, Zach, and we have the middle screen open, and that can only mean one thing if you're watching the YouTube version of this podcast, and that is it's time to open some cards and have a little discussion in a little segment we call Waxing on Wax. Zach, hello.
How you doing, Tim?
Always a pleasure to see you. We are winding down the summer. We are moving into the fall. I know you are in busy coaching duties, and it's football season. It is upon us, and we'll have a lot of time for you and I to talk this fall about football.
Yep. Been on the field now for 2 weeks. Scrimmage on Saturday, so we're right in the thick of it.
No doubt about that, and can't wait for that. That's going to be fun, obviously, at my alma mater, the old school, you and I, so we're always going to be rooting for that. So we'll be getting frequent updates during the football season. And, of course, if you like our podcast here on YouTube, please subscribe. And also, if you're following us for the first time, go find us on Podbean and Apple Podcasts, Spotify, subscribe, like, do all of that. And then listen to when Zach and Ryan join me weekly for the football podcast, which we will be doing. We'll find a night, whether it's Thursday night or whatever. Because I know that there's some Thursday night games this year. You may not be available on some nights, so we need to find a night clear of all of that to make that work for you.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll find a way.
All right. Well, we've opened some different packs in the past. We've opened some baseball, but tonight, and this is actually one that I know a few people are excited about. I had a few folks who are collecting cards who are like, I said we're going to open some wrestling, and they're very, very excited. We go back to my formative years, your formative years, 1991, and we are going to open some WCW wrestling cards. This is super exciting for me because this is our youth. I was 10 years old at the time, and this was I'm a big WCW back then guy. I am.
So the box is fully intact.
Wow.
Well, maybe not fully, but the cards, like we're actually cracking open this case for the first time.
Wow, this is awesome.
So it should be pretty exciting. We've talked about the cards themselves before we start. There's not really anything special in this set, right? 162 cards.
You're not going to make any money on WCW cards, are you?
Nope.
I mean, there's not much there.
The big names are there. There's Sting and Flair. Luger's in there.
My guy, Double A, Arn Anderson, is probably in there somewhere.
Yep. I know Sid is in here.
The very lovely Missy Hyatt is going to be in there, which we are very excited about.
Yeah, so, and there's several cards of each guy, right? There's 162 cards, but there's really only, what, maybe 15, 16 different people in this set. The yellow borders are singles. Red are tag teams, and then we've got some green for the personalities. Some of them are announcers and managers and things like that. So
I was a big fan of WCW around this time. I really was. I my first exposure to any of these guys was like 1989 when we moved and I discovered Saturday Night at Ringside, and they would always play on Channel 23. I didn't have cable, so I never saw any of the TBS stuff back then. But I would watch Worldwide Wrestling at like 9 o'clock. And that was my first exposure to guys like Flying Brian and Lex Luger, Ric Flair, Sting. And became a big fan. It became a nice alternative to WWE at the time. And, of course, I was watching that like crazy. But this provided a look at some different dudes, and I always enjoyed that. So this is a very fun time for me.
Do you think we could still send away for the WCW Premiere Collector's Album? On the back here?
I'm super into it. You know, it's funny, too. WCW has been gone now 21 years. It's hard to believe that. But they have been, you know, they went under in 2001. It's been a long time. Oh, what a first card. What a first card. Here we go.
All right. So we got Sid with the power bomb.
We got stuff to talk about there. The Nature Boy, Ric Flair, with a great card there. Ooh, the Southern Boys, who became the Young Pistols. Kind of a unsettling gimmick now. Ooh.
There's the card you were looking for.
Wow.
Missy Hyatt.
Very excited. This is great. Flying Brian. Yeah, we just talked about it. There he is. Doom.
Ooh. That looks like Butch Reed.
That looks like Butch Reed indeed. Hacksaw, Butch Reed, the Natural. Ooh, El Gigante.
Terry Taylor,
formerly known
as the Red Rooster.
Yep, formerly known as the Red Rooster. Ooh, Scotty Steiner in the Steiner Brothers pose there. I like that. Your guy, Ricky Morton, who, boy, is he loved down south. He's like royalty. He could run for office and win.
Another Sid.
Boy, yeah, you're right about the doubles. There's Sid.
Oh, yeah. There's literally only like 15, 16 guys in the whole set.
And then there's the Ron Simmons version of Doom right there as we get a look at a young Ron Simmons.
All right. So...
Do we start on the top with Sid Vicious?
Sure. We got two Sid cards. We'll pull them up here to talk about them.
And then, because obviously there's a few guys here to talk about, but the Sid Vicious, I think Sid is going to be, unfortunately for Sid, he's famous for breaking his leg in a horrendous way in the ring, isn't he? Like, that's what, like, all those years of wrestling work that he did is undone by the fact that he has a gruesome leg injury in the middle of the ring.
That, and there's a lot of stories about him leaving every summer to play softball.
I heard about that recently. Right? You know, I didn't know that at first. And now I'm starting to hear that he's just a giant softball dude. And he would always just mysteriously, like, leave companies or take breaks and go play big softball events.
Yeah. You know, Sid obviously was very impressive physically. And he looked like a dude. I remember, and I think it was in 91, which is when this set came out, when they were doing the war games.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And who did he... He was power bombing someone.
Yeah, he hits Flying Pillman. Brian.
Right? And doesn't he hit Pillman off the top of the cage, like, twice?
Yeah, he thinks he's got clearance to give Pillman this epic power bomb, and instead he almost decapitates him by hitting him into the top of the cage a couple times.
Yeah, yeah. He does it once, and he's like, yeah, I'll go back for it again, and... And wax him again. It's not good. It's not good. I do remember that.
That's War Games 91. Yeah, Wrestle War. Wrestle War 91 in the War Games. You can go look at that one on Peacock if you are curious about that one. Sid was crazy, but he was also, he was a pretty good mic guy and definitely looked the part. You feel like he kind of got, I don't know, like his run in WWE, the first one from like late 91 through 92 is kind of weird.
I always remember him... In the barbershop. Do you remember that when he destroys the barbershop and he hits the shaving cream and it explodes all over his face?
Yeah. He's going on this rant to come out how he's going to get Hulk Hogan and he's just walking around with shaving cream on his face and you can't take him seriously.
Yeah, and he does not break character.
He
stays right in it.
It's impressive. So. Yeah, what a beast. He was a beast. He's a tough guy. Yeah, big Sid Vicious guy. Enjoyed him back in the day. Psycho Sid, as some may know him as well. But yeah, the leg injury was it for him. That was the end of the run. And don't watch it. It's an ugly one. Don't watch it. It's bad, 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 bad.
Well, let's slide over here to Flair here.
Yeah, let's talk Flair.
Because this is, of course, the year that Flair leaves.
Yes.
Right, he leaves to WWF with the title.
That's right. Yeah.
They vacate the title for the first time, like in like 50 years, right? Something crazy like that.
Mm-hmm.
When he shows up on WWF TV with it, so this is the infamous Jim Herd year running the company. But it's amazing how they let him walk.
Yeah, it remains kind of a mystery. Herd didn't like him, wanted him to change his character. They wanted to make him some sort of, Roman god or something like that, and he was against that and wanted them to drop the title to Luger, and he's like, nah, I'm not going to do it. And then left with the belt, which is pretty much unheard of. But boy, they were so poorly run at that moment. But I actually think like the company almost needed Flair to leave to be able to reinvent itself. And it kind of did after Flair left. Like, Luger became a champion. They elevated up guys like Scott. You saw Scott Steiner starting to wrestle singles and Rick Steiner wrestle a little more. Like, they were able to cultivate guys in Flair's absence. And I actually think it made them better, made the business better when he went to WWF.
I just finished Luger's book. And maybe we can talk about him in a little bit here if we pull him out of one of these other ones. But it was an interesting read. Flair leaving obviously right changed it, but I think the amazing thing to me is that they basically lowballed him, telling him he wasn't a draw anymore, and What, he wrestled for like another 30 years afterwards?
Well, he's speaking of draws, he just wrestled his last match, although he's already talking about how he'd like to get back in the ring again, and which, please, nobody let him do that. That is as sad a sight as you're ever going to watch. Again, something you don't need to watch, Ric Flair's last match. He's 73
years old. I love Flair, but...
Yeah, I love Flair too.
Yeah, it's time to be done and go on from there.
It's sad to watch him because he's 73 and he knows, but he doesn't want to give it up. Like, he can't give up the Nature Boy. He's got to wear the outfits, even though he doesn't have any money. I mean, I just wish he'd just be okay with his career and be content and move forward. You'd like to see him do that. Be more, just retire with a little more dignity, I think. Speaking of dignity, Missy Hyatt.
Good segue there.
Thank you. It's professional podcasting we're doing here. Where do you rank her? I think she's grossly underrated. Don't you think? Like, she came up in the wrong time. Like, she was married to Eddie Gilbert and all that stuff, but never got to be the big star.
I mean, I know she went to ECW for a little while and did some other stuff. Like, that was later in the 90s. But I really feel like if she was 10 years younger and came through, she'd be a much bigger name.
Yeah, she came around in WWF or something when Sonny came around and you had AOL and you could download, you know, Sonny was the most downloaded image on AOL for 2 years or whatever it was. I feel like Missy Hyatt could have been that just as easy.
Yeah. Missy Hyatt could have given her a run, it seems like.
She needed to be more of a useful manager. I just never felt like they used her in ways that, you know, like, where she could be a factor. Like, the way WWF did, not necessarily with Elizabeth, because I thought she was kind of useless, but, like, Sherry was fantastic. Like, they utilized her and made her a part of the storylines and actually got something out of her. And I felt like they could have done that with Missy Hyatt. Not that she was a wrestler, but they could have used her in more meaningful ways. They just never did.
Yeah, right. I mean, the reality was she did some commentating. What, she managed the Steiners for a little while, right? Didn't they say that she was Scott's girlfriend?
Yeah, I think they worked an angle with that.
And then she, you know, in 91, I think that's when she was going against Paul Heyman. Well, Paul E. Dangerously at the time.
Yeah, because she was dating the kid from the Wonder Years, not Fred Savage, but the brother. Yeah. And I think they were working him into storylines with Paul E., which I was like, okay, that's never good, right? That's never a good thing when you bring, like, the... It's like, I got a celebrity boyfriend, and your celebrity boyfriend is, like, the third or fourth guy on the Wonder Years. Let's calm down a minute on celebrity stuff here. Let's ease up on that.
Okay, and then we're going to hold off on this part here, but, you know, sorry, Doom and the Steiner Brothers, because I really want to pull a Fabulous Freebirds card here first. So that we can talk about all three of them, because there's a good story.
We don't need to talk about the Southern Boys / Young Pistols.
Yeah. The 91. The Southern Boys, such a weird, right, like WCW gimmick.
Yep, you can't play them now either, too, by the way. Like, they're full of Confederate flags, and yeah, no. And speaking of, there he is. There's one of the Armstrong brothers, one of the many Armstrong wrestling brothers right there.
Missy Hyatt with good old JR.
Yep, for sure. Yep.
Flying Brian wrestling here?
That, you know, that's a great question. But there he is in his classic Cincinnati Bengals tights right there, because it's hard to believe he played nose tackle for the Bengals. How did that happen? El Gigante. There's your guy, Terry Taylor, back again.
More Rick Steiners. Steiner.
We're same cards. You're right. We're just getting the same guys.
Yeah, it's literally the whole set is, but yet and still no Fabulous Freebirds.
Are the Freebirds in this set?
They are in the set.
All right, Tommy Wildfire.
Okay, we got to talk Dutch Mantle.
Dutch Mantel here. Yep, for sure. I like
him. We're basically going to go through every guy almost in this set, I feel like.
Except we haven't drawn Luger or the Freebirds yet, and that's a shame.
We can keep going. I got another one
already. Okay, we can open a third pack. I'm good with this.
Okay, so Dutch Mantle.
People say he's like one of the real geniuses of the business behind the scenes. Like, he's one of the guys that really is good at like angles and booking people and making stars.
Does he have the book right now? When does he get the book in WCW? Do you remember?
He might have it right around here. Although I think Dusty's back doing booking around this time.
That's
too.
Right. Dusty, I think when Dusty comes, does Dusty keep him around?
I think he might.
Or Dusty might be the one who brings him back in the fold. I can't remember.
Yeah, I think, yeah, Dusty's doing some booking. I think Dutch Mantel's got some say in this as well. Yeah, you're right. I think that's about the time.
And he's got...
Yeah, because Dusty's pushing his son to the moon in 91, right? Correct. He is pushing Dustin like crazy.
So Dutch is, quite honestly, like completely forgettable as a wrestler.
100%.
But he's all over wrestling history between, you know, being a guy who's running things, right? He has a run in WWF a couple different times, doesn't he?
Yeah, even including the last 10 years he was in there doing stuff.
Right, with Zeb, right?
Yeah, Zeb.
The funny thing is he always had a different name.
Well, that's WWE. They don't want to let you be your own person because then you control your... They want to own you. They want to own your property.
But even then, right, he was... Because he had a run in WWE before that.
Yeah, he was like Brother Hezekiah.
Like yeah,
with the Blue
yeah.
Brothers,
Uncle
right?
Hezekiah, I think.
Yeah,
was,
Uncle Hezekiah. There it is. Right? Yeah, not Brother Hezekiah. I'm thinking of Kingpin.
Yeah, he was... he had Bradshaw when Bradshaw...
That's right. That's right.
Debuted. Yep. But before that, he had the Blue Brothers, right? The mountain twin-looking guys.
Who I aspired to look like. I could never get my hair to look like that.
They always reminded me of the Berserker.
They did.
They had
a great gimmick because they were twins. They were identical twins, so one could roll out of the ring while the other came in. Like that was it's a great bit. It's a perfect bit.
It's a bit, but is it great?
No, it's not. It's not enough to get you a title. I'm just saying it's an interesting component to it.
You know, twin magic, right? Isn't that what they called it with the Bellas?
Yeah.
Although the Bellas were clearly not identical looking at the time.
Clearly not. No. Nikki looked a different way.
Yeah.
And there was nothing wrong with that. Not that there's anything wrong with that at all.
Yeah. So Dutch has runs, right, where he was bouncing around the territories. He was in Smoky Mountain for a long time, right? Like 3-4 years. And he really kind of was, he was doing like color commentary. He'd had a weekly TV segment, whatever, talk segment, right? And he did a bunch of different things there before, you know, he dipped into WWF and then he was gone for a while and, you know, he did TNA, he came back to he's just been everywhere. It feels like
he's been everywhere. Cause he's kind of like Cornette, right? Where he's just got this mind for the business and like, he's really good at like crafting things. And I also think people, when they're desperate, they go to the well and they're like, well, who's out there? Well, this guy was really good 20 years ago. Dig him up and make him do it. Like that's why Bruce Pritchard came back to WWE.
Are you a Cornette fan?
I am actually a Cornette fan. I like Cornette. I think he's one of the best mic guys ever, and I think he's got a good mind. I just think he can just be a little much, but overall, I like Cornette.
He's a little over the top now for me. So I just saw the last card here, who it is.
Okay.
I'm going to flip this over so we don't save it, because we haven't even talked about this guy yet.
Okay, we'll save that. Rare here on the pod where we open three packs in a discussion. This is how excited we are. I guess they're going to force us to talk Ricky Morton at some point. I don't know, but we'll see.
If we don't get a Freebirds card here, we'll tell the story even without their card.
There you go. I like it.
We got 2 out of 3.
And so. We got Wildfire Tommy Rich for the second time. Dutch Mantel, who looks like Cactus Jack, but he's not Cactus Jack.
But look, he looks like a hairy bowling ball in a singlet.
Yeah, how would you want to wrestle that? He's just a hairy beast. Oh, there we go. The Fabulous Freebirds, Michael P.S. Hayes, thank you.
Oh, and then there's Luger, too.
The total package.
Good. Oh, your guy.
Oh, and Teddy Long, who's going one-on-one with The Undertaker. And Sting.
Did we have a Sting before
I don't
this?
Think we've had a Sting yet, no.
Which is weird, because we've seen a lot of people beating up Sting.
Yes. A lot of guys.
This is like the fifth card that somebody's beating up Arn Anderson.
Poor Arn Anderson, too. Just getting the tar beat out of him. More Freebirds. Now we got Jimmy Jam.
And Mr. Wall Street. So we can get back to some of those other guys, but let me pull back and get the Doom card and the Steiner Brothers card here. And we can kind of go through this story. And I don't know if you've heard this story.
I may not have. No, go ahead.
This just goes back to the old way of how they did television and stuff like that. Okay, so the start of the year, it was in January, I'm pretty sure. They basically hotshot these tag team titles around.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is, that some of it's pre-recorded and some of it's not. Okay.
Yeah.
So it's in February. I just pulled up the dates here so I could be exact. Okay. So February starts and Doom is the champions. On the 9th, the Freebirds come out with the tag team titles and are beaten by the Steiner brothers for the titles at a TV taping.
It's problematic.
Right. So then on the 24th, 2 weeks later, we get to see the Freebirds win the titles from Doom at WrestleWar. And then on March 2nd, the Steiner brothers beat the Freebirds and take the titles from them. So it's so crazy because, right, like, they're airing some stuff live. They're pre-taping, right? They pre-tape the Freebirds beating or getting beat by the Steiners. You know, and then 2 weeks later, the Freebirds actually win the titles on live TV. And then the pre-tape airs, you know, a month after it was taped. So it's kind of a weird...
Mick Foley, like, talks about this stuff too, where I think he said around this time when they were trying to get these television tapings done and they would tape certain angles at certain places because guys would be at different arenas at different days, stuff like that, that there were times they'd have to drop the belt three different times in like three different cities, like just to make sure that they had, you know, their bases covered. And it's pretty incredible stuff.
Well, and I almost feel like there's something to be gained from that, because it didn't allow them to rewrite scripts and storylines on the fly every week.
It's true.
Right?
Kind of got to get married to what you have for a little bit.
If you've already filmed the Freebirds winning the title a month from now, you kind of got to go down that road, right? Or whatever. So I don't know. I think there's something to be said for that. By the way, Michael PSAs, I enjoy him. Doc Hendricks, I do not.
Yeah, I'm more of a Michael P.S. Hayes guy than I am a Doc Hendricks guy. I don't think that's
Doc
close.
Doc Hendricks was terrible.
Not a good deal. No. Give me Michael Hayes all day. That was good. It's interesting to hear what those fans say to Michael Hayes and the Freebirds back in the 80s, like during World Class Wrestling. If you ever pull that up on Peacock and watch some of that older stuff, the crowds are relentless on Michael Hayes and... lot of real vitriol, like boy, anti-LGBTQ and real. It's real problematic stuff from the crowds on Michael Hayes and Jimmy Jam Garvin and Terry Gordy back then. Really crazy stuff.
All right, so we can probably wrap this thing up with Luger and Sting here.
Yeah,
unless you want to get to Teddy Long quick.
No, I just think we should go one-on-one with the Undertaker after we're done. That's fascinating though. Teddy Long, you got to give him credit. He went from being a referee to a great manager, back to a referee, back to the GM of SmackDown.
Yep.
Pretty impressive stuff from Teddy Long.
Another guy who was around for a long time.
Yeah. Love Teddy Long.
So Sting and Luger, I feel like they kind of go together.
They kind of do, right? And this was, and again, without WCW coming on my TV at 9 o'clock at night on Channel 23, I never see Sting. Like, my first foray to Sting was 1989, and he was already in the South, one of the biggest stars in the, like, Flair, Luger, Sting, huge stars, and we didn't know them, see them at all up here in the North, because they weren't on TV. Around 1990, 1991, when Ted Turner buys WCW from Jim Crockett Promotions and makes it a national brand, now we start to see guys like Sting, we start to see guys like Lex Luger every week, and... I was always a Sting guy. I was waiting for the day Sting would come to WWE. I was waiting for it. I kept thinking it would happen when I was younger, and it never did. He was loyal the whole time.
Yeah, and similar for me. I remember watching WCW Saturday nights on TBS when it finally came on, but we didn't have cable at the start, so I would catch it when I was at like my aunt and uncle's. Right, we'd be over there for something, and if we were over there at 6:05, right, you turn it on, and it's still right. Everything started at 05 on those channels.
Yeah, it's really weird, but that's true. Yeah, it's I love that they had pay per views on Mondays. It's so weird to think about that, but when they advertised their stuff in the '90s, '91, it's like, oh, Monday night, this is our pay per view. It's like, man, Could you imagine coming home from school and flipping on a pay-per-view? It'd be weird.
So we can wrap up here with Luger. A really interesting career.
Yeah. To me,
right? He kind of got hot-shotted into the center of things right away. Right? They made him a horseman briefly. Then he broke away with the horseman.
When you talk to, and they, I mean, the great nickname, the total package, because he is that, right? He looks the part. He can wrestle. He can move. The younger Lex Luger is really, really good.
So in his book, it's fairly interesting, right? It's, if you're looking for a bunch of stories from the road, this is not that book, right? Which so many of those wrestling books have become now. He just talks a little bit about how his training, and then, you know, just the different aspects of being the heel, being part of this. You know, they really told him not to learn how to wrestle, right? Just power through guys and look impressive.
Yeah.
You know, and then, of course, right, he's famous because he kind of dips on WCW and goes to WWF without really much say, right? He basically got permission to leave WCW as long as he wasn't going to wrestle anywhere else. So he signs on with WWF with their World Bodybuilding. Remember they had that?
That's right. He was going to be a big bodybuilding piece of that.
He was a bodybuilder for a year before he transitioned into wrestler. You've always got the stories about, you know, how he was supposed to win at WrestleMania and then maybe he spilled the beans the night before and that's why he didn't win at WrestleMania 10 and they changed the script on him. He doesn't touch on that. I was kind of hoping he would get to that, but he doesn't mention it.
You get the vibe Vince wanted him to be that guy, but never trusted him to be that guy. Like never saw it with the audiences, never bought it, and kept coming back to Brett and Shawn and Diesel and just kind of kept working past Luger.
The thing that amazes me too is like they did the Lex Express stuff.
Yep.
And he was actually riding around the country in a bus.
Yeah.
Like doing a bunch of different promos and things live to build him up. And, obviously the patriotic shtick had kind of run its course at that point. Right. We were done wrestling evil Russians and, you know, although they gave that to Rusev. So, but anyway, so, and then of course Luger goes back to WCW and shows up on the first Nitro
at Mall of America.
And then, so that story was a little interesting too, because basically it was Sting that got him there. You know, he had talked to Sting and Sting was like, hey, you're not wrestling with a contract. Like you should come and do this. And so, he stayed in Minneapolis the night before, but not where the rest of the wrestlers were staying. They didn't pick him up for the show until after it started, and they kind of snuck him in the back there for it. So, that'll always be one of the big things, right? Because didn't he show up on? He showed up unknown. Was he already pre-recorded on WWF that night?
No, I don't think he was, because the only time they said that happened was like with Rude.
Rick Rude,
who showed up on Raw and Nitro on the same night. The thing with, like, and Luger's obviously, his postscript maybe is as tragic as anybody's, and if you look at Luger now, it's interesting to see this giant Adonis of a guy that you see in this card, and he's a shell, right, because of all the health stuff and all the, you know, he had a stroke, I think.
He ends up having, I mean, he's basically, he was paralyzed for a while, and he's gained some of that strength back, and he... You know, there was talk, well, if he went into the Hall of Fame, he would try to walk across the stage and stuff like that. I don't know if he ever gets into the Hall of Fame, especially with the Elizabeth stuff.
Yeah, the stuff around the Elizabeth death is, I think it's always a part of his story, unfortunately. Yep. And it's kind of the, unfortunately for him in the wrestling business, it's sort of like the period. It's sort of like the end of the story, unfortunately.
He has, you know, found religion and Sting has brought him that way. But he's still, right, you can't get away from that story.
Yeah, it'll follow him, and I think he knows it. And the one thing I'll give him is, like, he stands there and kind of owns it. Like, he owns all of it. Like, he owns his life. He owns every decision he's ever made, and I think there's something to appreciate for that, which is something, like, you look at guys like Hogan, Flair. I don't know if they stand there and own it all the time, but Luger does, to his credit. Yep. I think he stands there and owns everything. And you're right. Sting, I think, is a big part of that. Sting is, I mean, the fact that Sting is still wrestling in his 60s, another guy who I think maybe needs to slow down. I'm a little concerned about that.
I'm not so concerned about it with those guys, but I just don't want to see it.
That's true.
Right? Like, I have no interest in seeing 60-year-old Sting, you know, like they did that one, right, whatever, at the WrestleMania a few years ago, where it was like, excuse me, the NWO guys in the ring and the DX guys in the ring. And it's like, you guys are all way too old for this.
Right.
Right. Like,
nice
the only
payday.
Game. But yeah. Yeah.
The problem is like, wrestling is full of dudes like you and I that are in their 40s and, you know, whatever, late 30s, 40s, and just want their guys and don't want anything to change and want it to be what it was 20 years ago. And, you know, I guess maybe we're all that way a little bit. I mean, yeah, you love when Steve Austin comes out, or you love, like, you know, stuff like that. But at the same time, you're right. It's like, maybe it was just better if it stays there. Those guys aren't the same dudes that they were 25, 30 years ago. Like, be content with who you have now.
Yeah, I agree. So looking through the checklist here, just as we wrap this up, I believe we got a card of every wrestler who was in the set. You know, actually, you know what? We didn't get an Arn Anderson.
Yeah, where's Double A? God dang it.
Arn Anderson, and we didn't get a Z-Man either.
The pride of Minnesota, one of the Robbinsdale guys.
Okay, so those were the two guys that we missed. We got all the tag teams. We missed Arn.
Just so you know, people I know have been listening, who they were so excited for this because they are collecting this set exactly. And they said they will be watching this to see if cards pop open that they're missing. So just be ready for some feedback
on this
set.
I've got a whole case here, so maybe, you know, we can find a way. You know, the only, I guess the one other card we missed there, we had a Jim Ross with Missy Hyatt, but there are a couple of Jim Ross specific cards that we didn't get one of him, but otherwise, I mean, that tells you how thin maybe the roster was.
Yeah, the fact that Elegante is as featured as he is, old Giant Gonzalez. That's a different roster at that time.
I looked at the roster. There's not really anyone missing aside from Vader.
Barry Windham.
Okay.
I think so. Well, I mean, he was big time, I think. He was one of their big stars at that point, I would
say. So I wonder if they didn't get Vader on there, if there was just licensing issues.
Is this pre-Rick Rude? It shouldn't be pre-Rick Rude, right? Shouldn't we have Rick Rude here? Or maybe it's just after. Maybe Rude comes later.
Yeah.
I think you're right. Rude might come later. And then it's a different game. Yeah, Stunning Steve Austin comes later. We get a young Steve Austin.
Right, and this is. I mean, these are 91 cards, but they're
probably 90. Yeah,
it's probably 90 because they wouldn't have put out a bunch of cards with Flair on them if he's leaving in May.
No, that's true. So I think you're probably right. 90 into 91. So this is before we see guys like Steve Austin and you know some Cactus Jack. So young Mick Foley comes in around that time in 91. So it would have been and Vader comes too. So maybe that would have been it. Good stuff. Right. Yeah, I love this, man. Waxing on wax. We opened up, talked a little classic wrestling. If we dig up some old WWF cards, we'll have to dig into that at some point, too. There's some good stuff out there. I hope you enjoyed it. Again, once again, subscribe to the podcast, listen in, and we will have another one real soon here. We're going to open up more cards, and we're going to chat a little bit more as we go. So thanks again to Zach. Thanks to everybody out there watching, listening. Keep your head up. Thank you, Sting, and we'll see you next time.